an eyebrow raiser that he had yet to play a full season, and they gave him this kind of contract. It doesn't mean that that contract was a bad idea either. I reject that opinion here today, completely out of hand. We're not there. We're not there because we don't know. We don't know. We just saw what we saw, and it left an emotional impact on all of us who root for this guy in particular, who root for him for what he's meant to this city, and who root for this team because this was the beginning. This was the second season of a window that was opening wide.
Welcome to the Darren Smith Show.
This is the big one, boys. This is the one that brings us back.
Soon, AM radio will reign king once more.
Ooh, yeah. Now, here's Darren.
We love you. We love you forever and ever.
On Extra 1360.
All right, just past 2 o'clock with you. It's hour number 3 on Extra 1360, FM 103.3, the iHeartRadio app. We have nothing new to report on Fernando Tatis Jr. We do have Zoom press conference time, though, so that's super exciting. Jace Tingler is going to speak at what time, Marty?
At 3:30. I don't know how much clarity we're going to get.
3:30, Jace Tingler is expected to have his press conference via Zoom. So stands to reason between now and then, I wouldn't hold your breath waiting for any sort of update on Fernando Tatis Jr. So they might be poring over different scenarios. They might be waiting for swelling. They might be waiting for imaging.
They have made a roster move by now.
There's a million things that still could go into this. So anybody's guess. Haven't seen a lineup even either. So, you know, they've been a little bit quiet down there at Tony Gwynn Drive and Trevor Hoffman Place or whatever Trevor's Street is. So it's been a little quiet coming out of the Padres today, as you would understand, dealing with this Fernando Tatis Jr. injury that we all watched on television. All right. In the meanwhile, it's Masters Week. Let's say hello to Steve Sands of the Golf Channel NBC Sports. We mentioned it a little bit earlier that the first of golf's four majors scheduled for 2021 is the Masters. I know what you're thinking. Didn't the Masters just happen like an hour ago? It feels that way. But it is back in its proper place. It will be at Augusta, Georgia. In Augusta, Georgia, at Augusta National. Steve Sands of the Golf Channel joining us on Extra 1360. Good afternoon, Steve Sands. How are you?
I'm doing great, Darren. How you doing, bud?
I'm great. You have anything that you could add to our conversation today? Not so much about Fernando Tatis Jr., but about a shoulder subluxation. I know you're not a doctor, Dr. Sands, but do you know anything about shoulder subluxations?
I do not. I've had three shoulder surgeries.
Oh, really?
I've never had a lubrication, whatever you call that.
Subluxation, I believe, is the correct terminology, Steve?
Never had that. Just a old man rotator cuff, labrum, you know, tear kind of thing.
All right. Well, we'll let you off the hook. So we'll
wait. All right, man. That would suck for the Padres if Tatis was out. Man.
Yeah. Well, it does. I mean, it does. There's nothing. Did you see the video?
I did, yeah.
I mean, that sucks for baseball fans, don't you think?
That's awful. I can't stand seeing athletes get injured. Not that I can't take watching. I can take that. I hate when teams put a lot of effort into putting a great roster together, get the confidence and the energy back in the building, or in this case, the stadium, and the ballpark, and the city, and all that, and then have something like that happen. It's demoralizing. I hope he's okay.
Yeah, same. We're hoping for a best case scenario here. Maybe a little bit of rest, a little bit of rehab, or some sort of short stint on the injured list. But we'll have to wait for the team, which has been mostly quiet here today, Steve, as you could imagine. So our first major of 2021. How are we feeling about the setup here heading into Augusta National? What a difference a year makes, huh?
Oh man, what a difference! There's going to be about 20% fans, so there'll be more people out there than we've seen in quite some time in golf. The golf course itself is in great shape. It's going to be firm and fast. It's going to be a lot different than it played in November. That was more to do with the time of year. There wasn't much they could do about trying to grow grass that time of year and that kind of thing versus April, November versus April in this part of the country. It's just difficult weather-wise, and I think they've got this place cooking the way they want. Mother Nature cooperates, and it doesn't rain too much the next 3 or 4 days. I think this place is set up for a fast track on Saturday and Sunday.
Are you there? Are you there right now?
Oh, yeah. I got here last Wednesday, man.
There's, oh, really?
Not many things more, speaking of demoralizing, than when they say, oh, hi, Mr. Sands, we have you for the next 12 nights. Yeah. Great. But not that I don't love Augusta. Love Augusta, but 12 days here, yeah.
Wow, all right. What does it look like wherever you are? Are you in a hotel room right now? Are you on the grounds? What does it look like, as you can see and tell us?
I just left the grounds. I'm in my car now. I mean, it's beautiful. The weather's great. It's going to be a little warm tomorrow, but sunny. It's supposed to rain a little bit, maybe Thursday, Friday, Saturday, but nothing like storms and delays, nothing. Yeah, I mean, there's a long way to go before that stuff happens, but it's the place looks fantastic. And it always is pretty. Everybody knows that. But the golf course itself is in just tremendous shape. And it's going to play, like I said, a lot different. Dustin Johnson got to 20 under par, Darren.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to happen now.
No, it's not. We're not going to even come close to that as well. Speaking of Dustin Johnson, he is the defending champ for those that might have forgotten that since it just happened a couple of months ago. Do you have any analysis on his champion's dinner? Let me read this for the audience here. The appetizers, yeah. Pigs in a blanket.
Love
with
it.
Lobster and corn fritters. That's an appetizer course there. What do you think, Steve?
I mean, if I go to weddings and bar mitzvahs and see pigs in a blanket, I can mow down about 20 of them. So, that's fine by me. I know you're one of those weirdo kale, quinoa, SoCal guys, Darren. But, you know, for any of the real people out there who like to actually eat like human beings, I think the last time I spoke, I was mowing down like a double sleeve of mega stuffed Oreos or something like that.
Yeah, sounds right.
Or potato chips, something
yeah,
like that.
Some yeah, some salt and vinegar potato chip, I think.
There you go. Salt and vinegar potato chips are great. Pigs in a blanket, strong choice. The lobster and corn fritters.
That's me.
Sounds like a fancy type of dish. Not so much. So, I mean, I love lobster and I love corn, but the fritters I could do with that.
All right. That's your appetizer course. Now, you're pig in a blanket, or you prefer a little bit of mustard on the side or some other condiment, or you just crush it as is? Au naturel.
Oh, no, you got to have a little condiment on there. I enjoy a nice hot sauce. I enjoy some ketchup. If you're going to do mustard, can't do French's mustard. It has to be a spicy or a golden browns kind of mustard.
Interesting. Ketchup on a pig in a blanket.
Huh. Ketchup on a hot dog.
What's your definition of hot sauce, by the way? I bet you we have different definitions of hot sauce.
Oh, you know, I could do Pete's. I could do Old Bay makes a nice hot sauce. You know, like a Tabasco kind of thing. I don't know. You know, one of those kind of whatever. There's a million hot sauces now, but I enjoy hot sauce.
There's a salad course here. You can have a house salad or a Caesar salad. Pretty self-explanatory, right? That's a pretty safe first course there for Dustin Johnson.
If I could get a balsamic vinaigrette and a blue cheese, I'd probably go with the regular salad. But if they didn't, I'd go with a Caesar. That'd be nice.
Okay, yeah. Maybe a little bit of fresh anchovy in there. Who knows? Family-style sides. We'll have mashed potatoes, spring vegetables to go with our main course, which is filet mignon and miso-marinated sea bass. Steve, what do you think about that?
Not bad. Not a bad choice. A lot better than when Sandy Lyle won in 88. The next year, he was the host for the Champions Dinner. He served haggis.
Haggis?
Well, haggis is from Scotland, and you'd rather, you know, lick the field from home plate to first base at Petco than have haggis be put in your mouth. So I would go with, I'd go with both if I was allowed. I would go with pride. That miso sea bass sounds pretty good, and who doesn't like a good steak?
Right. I think that's an and. I don't think it's an or. So I don't think it's a choice of filet mignon or miso marinated sea bass. It says and, so it's very much a both situation there, which is very considerate of Dustin Johnson. And dessert, because you're in Georgia, peach cobbler with apple pie and vanilla ice cream. So that's solid.
Yeah, I don't need vanilla. I prefer a little chocolate, a little caramel. Vanilla ice cream seems a little bland to me, but I'm not a big peach cobbler guy, but apple, I could mow down some apple. That'd be great.
All right. Well, good. So he gets positive reviews then from Steve Sands of the Golf Channel for preparing the Champions Dinner. Didn't he promise that he was going to make sandwiches one year?
This is the greatest conversation we've ever had. What was it?
Didn't he promise he was going to make sandwiches if he ever won the Masters?
Yeah, you can't do that. Once you win it, you kind of decide, wait a second, I got to have a real meal here.
Right.
You're not about to give Jack Nicklaus a pimento cheese sandwich.
Steve Sands of the Golf Channel is joining us from Augusta, Georgia, here on Extra 1360. What a gift to golf media. Said this yesterday. I know you're smart enough not to get wrapped up in the world of social media and Twitter, but golf Twitter lights up unlike anybody else besides Tiger Woods when Jordan Spieth wins a tournament. So having Jordan Spieth win this tournament, any tournament, for the first time in 4 years, the week of the first major of the 21 season, what a gift to the golf media that was.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, no question. You know, what's interesting about golf is that there's always a storyline, Darren. There's always something cooking. There's always something going on. It's a traveling circus week to week. It's not a team sport with GMs and, you know, like and having to deal with the Tatis situation and what are we going to do if that doesn't work out in our favor, that kind of thing. There are a lot of personalities in this sport, even though it's an individual sport, not a team sport. Don't have that locker room type mentality where you're having, you know, people dumping Gatorade on your head if you get a grand slam and you're going to be interviewed by the TV guy afterwards, that kind of thing. But no question, there are a lot of gifts we are handed in the golf media space, no doubt about it.
And how about this gift specifically here? Having Jordan play well here at the Valero Open, having him win a tournament for the first time in what felt like much longer than 4 years, quite frankly, Steve, but having him now, his storyline, knowing what happened on the 12th hole a few years back, how about just his game getting prepared for Augusta?
I think he's the one star, Darren, who can drive some ratings. People dig Jordan Spieth. Now, people dig Rory and Brooks and Dustin and Justin and all the great young players. But I think it's kind of proven out that when Jordan Spieth plays well, does he get Tiger numbers? No. But he gets Phil numbers. He's a really, really popular figure in golf and in sports. And he's just a good guy. He's an exciting player to watch. Wears his heart on his sleeve. Plays the game athletically. People just dig him. So I think that coming off of the win, 1,351 days since his last victory on the PGA Tour. That's a long time, man. And trying to win for the second week in a row, doing it here at the Masters, coming off of the storyline that he hasn't won in so long, I think golf is set up for a big week here in Augusta.
Is there any particular reason? We remember when Tiger deconstructed his swing and then came back with the new one. It took a little bit of time. And it was very much explainable that Tiger had an early season or early career dip in terms of performance and winning tournaments. Anything about Jordan here over the last, 1,351 days that we would point our finger to and say, maybe that's why he's not been a winner on tour?
Oh, man, there's so many things. You know, like the putts weren't dropping. It seems like Jordan has one of those games that when he's going well, the putts are falling from everywhere. So, you know, you take one putt a day that doesn't drop that, you know, had been dropping or did drop this last week. You know, that's four shots for the week. That's a lot in golf. That's a blowout in golf. Most wins are by one, two, three shots, not four. So doesn't take much. It's a very fine line. You know, he was tinkering with his swing, Darren. He was doing a lot of technical things. Jordan is as athletic as he is, as great a player as he is, he tends to be a little bit more of a scientist than an artist when it comes to the long game. So with his driver, with his swing, you know, when he gets around the greens, that magical short game comes out because he uses his imagination. And it's not science, it's artistry. So I think he got back to his roots. He stuck with his guys, Cameron McCormick, the swing coach, and Michael Greller, his caddy. Everybody's like, oh, you got to drop this, try this. He stuck to his guns, and it all came to fruition yesterday, or 2 days ago for him, sorry, on Sunday, and it was fantastic. He deserved the win. He worked hard to get back to that point. I'm happy for him.
How long would your list be of you know, realistic choices here, like guys who you think could contend for this championship this week? I'm guessing Spieth would be on it. How long is the list that you would start with here heading into the week?
Oh, it's pretty deep. You know, the Masters is we talk about this every year, Darren, that the Masters has 88 invitees this year. That's you know, normally a major has 156. When we're at Torrey Pines in June for the U.S. Open, when you're going to be buying me dinner and not quinoa and kale.
Nope.
Let's see what Marty eats, too. I can't wait to see.
We're going to crush burgers at the Lodge, I'll tell you that. I know exactly where we're going to go. The Lodge at Torrey Pines, they've got an amazing burger. It's spectacular. That's where we're going to crush.
Okay, that's good. Are we allowed to get on? Can we get to the Lodge the week of the U.S. Open? Anyway, we'll do whatever you want.
I'm riding your coattails.
Yeah, right. So, anyway, I think the Masters is the one where it seems like it's the easiest to win because there are so few players here compared to the other majors. But in reality, it's the hardest one to win because it's the one you go back to every single year, and the players with the experience have such a huge advantage over any other venue in major championship golf. So That's why you always see 7, 8, 9, 10 guys with a great chance. And then there's a few off the board guys. But I would say, you know, 15 to 20 guys would be on my list to win, but that's it. I mean, I don't think it's one of those crazy off the board weeks. Doesn't seem like it anyway.
How about the defending champ, Dustin Johnson? He haven't had a back-to-back repeat champ since Tiger did it in 01 and 02. So it's been a little while, but Dustin Johnson certainly seems capable. And is there something from having won this tournament in November, even if it was a different course, different circumstances, Sanzi, that you think obviously will be beneficial to him this week?
Yeah, I can't figure out why he's not the favorite. I know Spieth comes in with the win. Thomas had a win at the Players' Championship a couple weeks ago. I think Dustin Johnson's right there. He's definitely on the short list. You know, he can overpower the golf course. It's going to be firm and fast. Now, that's going to make the golf course shorter because the ball will be rolling out more. It won't be longer. If it's wet, it's longer. So the Dustin advantage with his length will be negated just a little bit, but not much. And I think that, and that's assuming the weather stays okay and it does not rain too much and the course stays firm and fast. But Dustin can feel those vibes from November here. Doesn't matter that it was a different time of year. Doesn't matter that the golf course will be firmer and faster this week than it was in November. What matters is that he won. He knows how to finish here. He knows he can do it. There's a big difference between believing you can do it and actually doing it. And he has. And very few players. There are 18 champions in the field this week of the 88. Now you can eliminate, you know, no offense, but Ian Woosnam, Jose Maria Lafable, you know, guys like that, they're not going to win. So if experience matters here more than anywhere else, why not go with Dustin Johnson?
So a couple of notable names here for this audience. Rory, it's been a long time, 2014. He seems to, at least when I've tuned in this year, which, you know, is nowhere near as much. I defer, obviously, to Steve Sands. But it seems like he's, what's the right word? It seems like he's got some conflict going on in his game. But it's always a storyline until he wins this tournament that this is the missing piece of his career Grand Slam. How do we feel about Rory arriving this week and having to field all those questions again?
You know, he's one of those guys. It's his seventh attempt at winning the career Grand Slam, Darren, which is the most prestigious thing you can do in the sport. Only five guys have ever done it. And I think that, again, it's so hard to win here because of the pressure and because of the palpable energy and the intensity of the place. There's just less oxygen here than anywhere else. Rory knows what's in front of him. He's not playing great right now. He's flying under the radar. Nobody's picking him. And I think that's a good spot for him. However, Darren, because it's 4 days, if it was a one-shot deal, Baylor-Gonzaga, that's different. You know, the Super Bowl is a one-shot deal, totally different. Seven-game series, the best team is most likely going to win, you know, every time. So Rory's biggest issue is not is he going to win or not. His biggest issue is if he doesn't play well Thursday, well, then it's just a continuation of his poor play. If he does play well Thursday, then the pressure ratchets up again on Friday because now he's in the mix to try to win the career Grand Slam. So he's damn if he does, damn if he doesn't. I like the fact that he's flying under the radar. He's now working with a swing coach named Pete Cowan, who's a great guy, and he's great at what he does. So let's see how he does on Thursday, and then we'll see what happens. But I'm not counting Rory out just yet. Not yet.
And I know you don't like picking first-time winners at this golf tournament for every reason that you just laid out, but if we forced you into picking a first-time winner, who would it be?
Ooh. I would say a first-time winner would be Justin Thomas. He's talking about the Masters, right? Not any tournament.
Yep.
Yeah, I would say, my three favorite, Spieth has won it. I think Johnson's won it. I think Patrick Cantlay and Justin Thomas would be the two who have not won the green jacket, who I would say have the best chance to win.
All right. Well, we look forward to it. That's a lot of clothing you had to pack for this trip, huh?
Oh, man. Yeah, this is our, we do six in a row on NBC and then come here for the week and a half. So, you know, 7.5 weeks, man. It's okay. A lot of suits and ties, man. I'm not a big suit and tie guy, but when you eat kale and quinoa, do you have to go suit and tie, or does San Diego discount that and we can just kind of chill like in the SoCal?
California day? Casual. Come on. When in Rome, Sanzi, you gotta dress the part here. So we're all California casual here. We'll give you a full update on that. We'll email you a spreadsheet so you know what to pack for the trip out here in a couple of weeks.
I appreciate it. You know what the best part about this whole thing is, Jen? We've been doing this forever, man. I have no idea what you look like. I mean, you could be a 400-pound guy, or you could be like 168 and in fabulous shape. I have no idea.
Hmm. What would you bet on? If those two extremes, what would you bet on?
Well, based on the fact that you were laughing at me that I was eating Pringles, mega-stuffed Oreos, and salt and vinegar chips, and you're a big kale, quinoa kind of, you know, healthy food guy.
Right.
My guess is you're 6 feet, 174.
Wow, you almost nailed it. You should work at a carnival. That was really good. That was almost so spot on. And while you're out here, I hope you make time. We'll get up. We'll do a little bit of sunrise yoga out there on the cliffs in La Jolla. It should be really nice, peaceful, very zen. We'll get you in the right state of mind.
Can't we just get a burrito at Juanita's and Encinitas? I mean,
we'll do a little bit of everything. It's good to live life.
Can we go to the Brig in Solana Beach and go Taco Tuesday? I mean, geez, can we do something fun there?
Got a balance. We got a little bit of balance. We'll do all of that. But a little sunrise yoga, it's good for the soul. It'll give you nice inner peace here, let you breathe a little bit, Sansi. So, you know, we just want to make – we'll take good care of you. Don't worry about it.
Sunrise yoga.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. God. Sounds great, doesn't it?
You're on the West Coast, man. Yeah. Sunrise doesn't come over the water. I'm an East Coast guy.
All right, we'll do it at sunset then, but you'll be working, so it's totally different. Well, we're getting closer and closer. And by the way, they just announced new lifted restrictions out here, so we're going to have a good time.
This relationship is deteriorating.
Thank you for the Masters preview. Have an excellent week.
All right, brother. Be good.
See you, brother. Thank you. Steve Sands, everybody of the Golf Channel and NBC Sports. Yeah, I think that sounds like a great plan. Comes out here, we'll trot him around, we'll take him, we'll get him good food, we'll get him good drink.
The lodge?
And we'll balance
him. Wouldn't you want to just kind of go out, just get away?
Well, I hope we can get away, but if we're going to be convening and rendezvousing there on site, then the Lodge at Torrey Pines has an outstanding burger. Now,
I'm sure our friends at Rockies
are listening, and they're going to give Marty an earful.
We'll
take him to Rockies, yeah. but the Lodge has a great burger.
Got to take him. I think he needs to experience Rockies. Lord, absolutely.
Yes, we'll treat, but... Because he's working and it's there on site, I figured it would be most convenient. But we'll take care of him. We'll definitely take care of Sands. I got the Murphy bed ready. He's good.
Oh, really? So that's who the Murphy bed is for.
Back after. There is that Padres lineup. Jake Cronenworth will bat lead off tonight, play second base. Tommy Pham, center field, batting second. Manny Machado, batting third, playing third. Cleanup. First baseman Eric Hosmer, batting fifth, Wilfredo Myers. In left field, Jurickson Profar, playing shortstop and batting seventh tonight.
No, Profar's in left.
Profar's in left. What did I say?
He was at short.
I said playing shortstop and batting right. Right? I know. I was getting to it. Profar in the outfield.
Sorry.
And then following up by saying playing shortstop, batting seventh. Ha-Sung Kim, Victor Quarantini, who had an amazing reaction last night to a sacrifice fly. Maybe my favorite moment of the game last night.
That was it. Man, it's always sacrifice flies with you, isn't it? It's remarkable how it comes full circle.
He pulled like a Garvey, put his hand up in the air, started running down the first baseline.
It was spectacular. That was like a Garvey. That was like the Garvey home run.
It really was. It was the Garvey home run celebration of sacrifice flies.
He's fun to watch.
For a fifth game of a regular season. I loved every single second of it. If you missed it, I posted it because it made me laugh and I needed it in that moment. And Yu Darvish will be on the mound. His second start. Of the 2021 season. So Cronenworth, Pham, Machado, Hosmer, Myers, Profar. Sorry if that got a little wonky or confusing. Kim, Caratini, and Darvish. That is your Padres lineup tonight. So all we know and all we can update you on is that Fernando Tatis Jr. is not in the lineup. We haven't seen a roster move. We haven't heard anything outside of speculation. So that's what we got. What we have, look, there's John Schaefer.
Wow.
Marty, nothing. Not interested.
You didn't text us today? Nothing.
I don't think he did.
No.
I don't think he did. What we have is what we had when we woke up this morning, which is Jace Tingler, who seemed really concerned, you know, and don't know Jace Tingler. Met him once, interviewed him twice. Don't claim to be his BFF, but he looked really wide-eyed and a bit shook last night. Talked a little bit about this injury.
Right now he's feeling, you know, better, and from obviously he was in, you know, quite a bit of pain, you know, coming out of the game. So I don't have a lot of information except the fact that they're gonna do more tests and evaluations tomorrow, and we'll kind of see where it goes from there.
Yeah, and too early to know whether he would require surgery. It's a good question to ask. It's the right question to ask. But how much of this is related to stuff that we just learned about, I think 13 days ago in Arizona?
Yeah, that's the same one. And, you know, it's, you know, comes out, comes back in. And so he's been dealing, you know, with that. And then obviously tonight, you know, it was the first time we've kind of seen it in game action, you know, from swinging or anything like that. So, you know, we'll see how it goes tomorrow, but he's going to get more tests tomorrow.
All right. So we've seen one on the offensive side last night, swinging, going down in a heap. We've seen it on the defensive side, which looked like every other routine ground ball play that you've ever seen. Something seemed off since the start of the season. I you know, the pressing thing, the more you think about it, the more you go, why would he press any differently now than he would have as a rookie when the Padres made a very debatable decision to put him on the opening day roster? But maybe the weight of the contract, maybe, you know, maybe that factors in. All of it is fair. All of it's fair, but it's all just speculation at this point. As far as the college basketball season, this game was over pretty much from the opening whistle, from the opening tip. And it was a bit of a letdown given what happened Saturday. Baylor destroyed Houston. They could have won that game by 50 on Saturday night. And Gonzaga played the game of the tournament. They played the game of the tournament. It was one of the better games that we've seen in recent memory. Greatest game of all time. I think that that's maybe a little much, but it was certainly up there. It's a memorable game, UCLA-Gonzaga. We had wondered yesterday whether that would have taken something out of the Zags. I think it did. I think it did. So we'll have to wait for the next undefeated season, the seventh in the history of college basketball. And give Gonzaga credit for this. You know, Gonzaga's a program that nobody ever heard of until the turn of the century. That's it. That's as long as we've been aware of Gonzaga. And they keep chugging along. And as a mid-major city like San Diego, pulling for San Diego State, I think there is something that you can appreciate about Gonzaga. That they didn't win their first NCAA tournament game until 1999.
Is that right?
That is right.
It just feels like they've been part of the conversation for as long as I've been watching sports.
No, they keep going. They keep going. They keep going. They've broken through. They've gotten into the Final Four. They've gotten into the championship game. And the last hurdle for them to clear is what? To win a national championship. Mm-hmm. They've been in the game twice. By comparison, San Diego State didn't win its first NCAA tournament game until 2011.
They've only been there twice. Which, what was
championship
the
game?
Do you recall the margin of deficit the first time?
They got blown out by North Carolina.
Mm. Oh,
yeah, and they got blown out again last night. Now, again, I don't know.
Are they getting any closer? any dent in that deficit?
I think so. I think this was a really, really good team. It just, you know, they used a lot of fuel there to get through UCLA. For me, I know that sounds like you're not giving Baylor any sort of credit whatsoever. I am. Baylor's good. They've done this back-to-back years. Baylor didn't do it in the tournament, but Baylor was in a position. We talked a lot about Dayton, San Diego State. Baylor was another team that would have been a top seed last year as well. So give them credit. They came back here. They put themselves as a one. They were one of the better teams all season long. They come out of a tougher conference. I don't necessarily buy that this is a product of playing in the West Coast Conference. I don't personally. I think this is a little of that, and it's also a lot of what happened on Saturday night. But, you know, it's easy to you know, I think Gonzaga is a great inspiration here. That, you know, here's a program that was legitimately contemplating whether or not it should drop to Division III. Like 25 years ago, figured out a way to invest in basketball, and look at them now. They're a brand name. They're an annual participant in this tournament, and they seem to be getting better. So they have one last hurdle. And I'm not somebody who's inclined to say a lot of nice things about Gonzaga. As you know, I'm still taking that 2000 loss pretty hard. But you give them credit because they just keep chugging along, man. They just keep going back to the NCAA tournament. They got another good recruiting class coming in. They're going to lose some guys to the NBA. But they, you know, last night they just, this was a non-contest. This was over in the first 15 minutes of the game. It's a bit of a bummer of an ending to the season, but all in all, good tournament, good to have it back, what it represented, et cetera, et cetera. All right, stay tuned. Marty will be on the Jace Tingler Zoom call coming up at 3:30.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think, right?
Yes.
Don't mean to volunteer your time if you had other plans, but Marty will be on that, so pay attention. We'll have a little bit of news coming your way as best as we can. Coming up next, The Fusion. John, Rich, in studio.
Coronavirus.
Roger, ignition engaged.
The countdown is on.
3, 2, 1.
Come on!
It's time for The Fusion.
All right, I had something to read, and I've logged off my computer so that I can make way for Rich Orenberger. Jim Russell, do you mind?
Yeah, give me 1 second.
Okay. It's okay. Okay. We've got 6 minutes. Good afternoon to the Loose Cannons. How was your guys' day off yesterday?
Boy, well,
oh, that's right.
It was busier than work days because when you have kids, it's just, there's no such thing as that. It's like being in New England again. No days off, Bill Belichick. It's the same thing with these kids. They just want so much from you. But I will say that along with all the added work, a disappointing finish to the tournament. After having that Gonzaga Bruins, you know, battle royale to have things come to a skidding halt for them, it would have been nice to see history made. It would have been nice to see a basketball game, period. It was just slaughter out there. But I don't know. How was your day?
It's great. Until about 7:20, 7:30, whatever time that was.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah, the Tatis. Well, that's the thing. You say day off, and I forgot because I worked with Jim, obviously, last night. We covered
right.
this.
That's right. Rich had the day off.
Rich had the day off. I'm with you on that. I was a little bit surprised by the basketball result, but I'm not that surprised looking back, considering what went down Saturday night. Like, to come off that high and be ready to go against a focused team like Baylor, I think in retrospect, that's hard to do. You're asking a lot of that team.
So you said on Twitter last night something that was very interesting. It caught my eye. I meant to text you on this. You said this reminds me of Duke and UNLV.
The whole game was one-sided. You felt like the other team was never in it.
A friend of mine who worked at Duke in 1990, was there in the early 90s, said the same exact thing.
Oh, wow.
And actually said it after watching what happened on Saturday night. He goes, this reminds me a lot of the position we were in at Duke after our Saturday night game against Kentucky, trying to figure it out and get ready for Monday night where we just got beaten down by UNLV. So that was from somebody who worked at Duke.
That is interesting.
Said that reminded him the scenario was the same. So good job out of you.
The way the game started, it's just like it's
They were
never in it, and Gonzaga's offense is so good, but their defense was so bad. It like didn't give their offense a chance to get in the game because their defense wasn't very good. Now what is interesting about UNLV Duke is what happened the very next year. Like, can Gonzaga do this again? It's easier said than done. I mean, all these programs at the top like Gonzaga can reload. But, I mean, it is a perfect... When you get to a national championship game and you haven't lost and you're a favorite, that only happens so often. I mean, you could have a great team and lose in the first round. Ohio State this year is a 2-seed loss to a 15. We see this stuff all the time. So, I mean, what Mark Few has done is unbelievable. Now, will they ever cap it off with a national championship? I believe at some point he probably will, but there's, you know, it's not easy to do that, obviously.
It'll be curious to see if this isn't the time to cash the chips. You know what I'm saying? Like, there are vacancies, and there will be. You know, it's...
I don't know if you can leave Gonzaga.
I don't know either. I'm not saying you can or you can't, but it's something to be said, and I think there are certain coaches that just won't leave. I think Dutcher's one of those guys who will stay in his place because the Minnesota was the job, right? That was the one we feared that he could walk away from the Aztecs program for, but it appears that he's going to stick around. But there is a ceiling at mid-major programs. There's no question about it as far as pay and as far as really national attention. You generate your own. He's done an incredible job at Gonzaga, but it is capped.
But he does it every year, though. You know, it's not like, hey, every once in a while, here comes Dayton. And then Dayton, okay, see you later. Or right, St. Joe's, right? Right? Becomes mm-hmm. a one seed.
Florida
one
Gulf
year.
Coast yep. or whatever it is.
They've gone yeah. to the tournament 23 times.
No, it's true.
Since 1999. They go every year they go.
They've so, made a know, scene of it, yeah.
They
yeah.
Oregon made a run at him, and he turned Oregon down whenever that was. And Oregon is his alma mater. If you say no to Oregon and you're Mark Few, I wonder if you would say yes to anything else. It reminds me a little bit of Coach K. Coach K made Duke. And he saw it all the way through and reaped all the rewards of it. And Duke today is a lot different than Duke back in 1990 against UNLV. I think Gonzaga, there's a comparable feel to me between what Duke was and what Gonzaga is becoming and has become. Now, Gonzaga is not in the ACC.
Right.
That's the one caveat. They almost left for the Mountain West. They almost left for a Big East. There was talk of a Big East with St. Mary's and Creighton and Gonzaga. I don't know if they need anyone else, to be honest with you, because they're so special. The program is so unique. That, you know, they can play Pepperdine and LMU.
But they didn't get to the championship game beating West Coast Conference teams.
Right, because they would load up
that,
in the non-conference.
That narrative, to me, doesn't hold water because they got through Blue Bloods to mm-hmm. get there.
Oh,
so,
yeah. Well,
it's the tournament.
I just mean it's conference-wise. It has nothing to do with, like, money, for example, yeah. San Diego State, same situation. That is a great program developed by Fisher, passed on to Dutcher, and he's done an incredible job since. But Mark Few has the same problem that Dutcher has in San Diego. Unless you are part of a bigger, like an ACC in the case of Coach K at Duke, or the Pac-12, should you be absorbed by them in some sort of super conference realignment, there is just a ceiling to the money. I mean, if that's important at all, he's been there forever. He's developed the program, like you said, and it appears that there's sticking power there. But is there ever going to be room to make a change? I don't know, or if that's even in the designs for Mark Few.
I don't even know what he makes, to be honest. I mean, I don't think, to your point, I don't think it's Big
no,
Ten money.
No.
I don't it's think like, it's ACC
it's
too, money.
It's probably, you know, $2 million at the most.
It's some. I think it's somewhere
you know
in that
live
range.
In Spokane.
Yeah.
I mean, that's.
I think he'll be fine.
Yeah. I don't think he's going paycheck to paycheck. I mean,
it's not 300. It's not 340. It's not 14 years, 340 million, right. which Fernando Tatis signed on the dotted line and maybe ends up being. I thought at the time, I think, I don't know. I forget, Darren, did you feel this way? I think you did. I thought it was a pretty team friendly. I thought it was a reasonable deal all around.
Seemed reasonable.
Because it wasn't some crazy, when you looked at the average valuation, like it wasn't some crazy number. You knew 10 years from now, guys would be making $30, $40, $50 million a year.
Yeah.
If he's still playing on that deal. And 1 year will not make this deal, by the way. They could tell me right now he's out for the year. If they told us that right now, I'm not going to say it's a bad deal. I will say he still hasn't played a 162-game season. That's accurate and factual. But it's hard to gauge the entirety of the deal based on what happens in 2021, healthy or not. For my money.
I think when you sign a deal for 14 years in any sport, you probably do so with a pretty reasonable presumption that somebody's going to miss an entire season.
That's true.
Yeah.
You know,
like I
say
this with pitchers. An ace is like, I know he's going to miss a season because of Tommy John, and I still want this guy on my team. So I mean, it's just, you know, this is sports. This is what comes with it, especially in baseball.
I agree with you 100%. You would definitely prefer that major injury season to be closer to the back end than the front end of the contract because he's got a lot of years to now play with this shoulder should it need to be surgically repaired. But the sort of repair that they're talking about him having, I've had on both of my shoulders. I've had both of my labrums operated on in my right and left shoulder where they anchored him down. You lose some of your mobility, not much if you rehab appropriately, and not much, oddly enough, I'm a pretty flexible guy, and like I didn't lose a ton of range of motion, and since he's starting from this incredible flexibility basis, I think, I mean, look, again, that's assuming that he has to have surgery immediately, or if it's the best idea to do it now, if they're being super conservative, whatever. I mean, he could probably make a full recovery, and this will probably be just a clip or an afterthought when the contract's all said and done. But again, you'd probably rather him have played a while before getting.
Plus, the way he plays, right?
He plays hard as hell.
Stuff. I mean, it's sort of hard to imagine now, given what we've seen here over the last couple of weeks, that something similar isn't going to happen.
Yeah,
just given the style of play, the way he runs the bases, the way he plays defense, the way he plays offense.
How about the way he swings the bat, guys? I mean, the day before he hit a ball 465 feet, and the swing he injured himself on. By the way, even being fully healthy, I mean he's got so much torque and pull and like angulation that like he swings his ass off.
Yeah,
you know, like it doesn't surprise me,
John.
Is that bad to say? But you know, he swings out of his ass, to be honest with you. And that's how you hit a ball 500 feet.
Well,
and
yeah,
he's capable of doing that.
He uncorks himself, and I agree, John. Clean it up.
Clean it up.
What is going on here?
That's Rich's job, right?
Yeah.
Is today the day somebody's eating a chip?
Yeah. All right, Rich, we're ready. Where is it?
We are not eating a chip today. I don't.
Yo,
we're going to forward promote this thing. It's going to be a happening. We're going
to 2022.
Multiple camera angles. It's going to be like a Kubrick film.
Okay.
It's and by that I mean horrible, and it will be a horror film.
Jim,
what do you call an ambitious vegetable? Hustle sprouts.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought you took a left. I thought you were going
to
take a right.
You have something you're supposed to read.
Oh yeah, the award show for fans is back. That celebrate. It's the iHeartRadio Music Awards coming to Fox on May 27th, and tomorrow at 6 a.m., find out which of your favorite artists have been nominated. Don't miss it tomorrow at 6 a.m. right here on Extra 1360.